If you love the world of film and TV, then you've come to the right place. This is Reel to Reel, a podcast where film and conversation meet. Whether it's in front of the camera or behind the scenes, there's so much we can talk about. Grab your popcorn, dim the lights, and join us for this episode of Reel to Reel. Here's your host, Sergio Barrera.
Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Reel to Reel, the final episode under this title, because very soon we will be changing the name to Reel Talk, and we'll talk more about that in a future episode. But for now, I am excited for today's conversation, because with me are two folks that are going to help me review the just-released finale of the Star Wars trilogy, the most recent trilogy, but also the final film of this triad of trilogies that Star Wars has had going for 42 years. And to have that conversation with me and give us their thoughts, please welcome first Nick Kramer. Nick has been with me on several shows in the past and brings a unique perspective on the film, and it's always a good conversation with him. So Nick, thanks so much for taking time to being here on Reel to Reel.
On this fine Sunday now afternoon. Hello, hello.
Yes, absolutely. Which, of course, gives away the fact that by the time this is released, it'll be the day after Christmas, which will be Thursday. So thanks for that. But totally okay. Also joining us from the derby world, those of you who know me know that I have been involved in roller derby for a while. This cat has been in it just as long and is, well, quite the appropriate derby name for what we're going to talk about today. My friend Paul Britton, Darth Paul. Paul, thank you so much for being on the show.
Oh, thank you for having me. Awesome. Totally stoked. Can't wait to talk Star Wars. It's always fun.
Yeah, absolutely. You were on recently, and I know I'd look forward to having you back on, and especially for something like this. Darth Paul, obviously, that derby name comes from the world of Star Wars, I would imagine.
Certainly, obviously, yes. And our previous adventure was with the Matrix trilogy, so you and I are definitely attuned to the trilogy world. So I think we're ready to go. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, I'm going to just flip the script on you guys, and instead, we're going to talk about cats. Just kidding.
Oh,
yay!
It was better than cats. I'd see it again and again.
But no, we're here to talk about Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker, the most recent installment and final installment, so they say, in what has been a triad of trilogies, as I saw written in an article I read earlier this morning. And, you know, when I look back on the history of this franchise, and I realize that it's spanned 42 years, which includes different styles of filmmaking and so forth, all the way back from the start, with George Lucas and Star Wars, you know, breaking ground and you know, really, really stepping out of a box cinematically to where we are now. And there's so much that has happened in between. And if there's one thing I know that I feel it'll be important to include in this conversation is people are divided when it comes to not just this film, but the overall experience of what Star Wars has been and what evolved and what it evolved into. The first three movies had their own fingerprint in terms of Lucas's work and other directors that he had working with him. The middle set of movies, which were the prequels, certainly had their issues and you know, people had thoughts and so forth, and I'm being gentle. And then we get to this, the Star Wars for the modern age, and we get The Force Awakens, The Last Jedi, and now the final installment, which is Rise of Skywalker. And it's Rise of Skywalker that we're here to talk about, but I don't think we can have this conversation, guys, without, you know, seeing it through the filter of what the history has shown us in terms of this franchise. Nick, can we, you know, is it possible to even have a conversation about this particular film without addressing the, you know, sort of where it came from?
I mean, this film, yeah, I mean, the fact, yes, it's an ending to two things. The current trilogy, the current modern trilogy, right? And of course the ending, the new ending to the entire core franchise. It's not the ending to the franchise, because of course Star Wars is going to continue, and things that don't have anything to do with Luke, Leia, Vader, all the old characters and everything like that. It's going to continue like it already is with Mandalorian and stuff. So, yeah, I mean, talking about the fact that the old movie, the old two trilogies, especially the OG trilogy, you know, lead up to this, are important to not only why this movie is seen as good by some, but also seen as why it's bad by others. So,
yeah.
But,
well, and that's the thing. I think this franchise has always done a marvelous job of polarizing audiences. And so that's going to be part of the discussion points today that we'll make throughout. So, Paul, as you look at sort of the span of the franchise and you know, where it's brought us to, you know, give me initial impressions on how, where does this film land in terms of its predecessors and, you know, how important is it for us to have a historical perspective as we look at this film?
Yeah, well, I would say that the number one goal of this movie was to be the capstone on 9 films, you know, and self included. So, you know, like the 8 other films, this is it. Its number one goal is to end the saga. The Skywalker saga ends with this movie. So you need to have a film that accomplishes that. That's its primary goal. So everything else is secondary, and so it has to be constantly be aware of what came before it, so that it feels true to those other movies, so that it feels true to the 3 movies, or the its own little pocket of trilogy, you know. So there are saga arcs that need to be fulfilled, and there are character arcs for the 3 within this trilogy that need to be fulfilled. And so, you know, that's a heady goal, and that's not something that you can easily accomplish. And so, you know, I think any review needs to be taken under that context. I don't think you can really talk about it without saying, hey, these are things it has to do, you know, and then you go from there.
Yeah, and then, of course, the decision from our standpoint as we critique this thing is, do we feel like it met or didn't meet, you know, those types or, you know, those markers? And I think that's where I'm excited about this conversation, because Nick and I actually went to go watch the movie together. And I mentioned that because we both had very, 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 very dissimilar views in terms of the success of the film. And so, you know, I knew it was going to be an exciting conversation because, you know, wherever you land on this, and I've read tons of articles that both favor and, you know, pan the movie. What I think is the common arc and thread is that, hey, at least it got you to the theater. You know, there was a point after Last Jedi, Nick, I think, where we both talked about, will this film draw after, you know, Last Jedi and its results? You know, there was always that concern of, will this movie draw? And we knew that it would draw in terms of it being the finale, but, you know, there was always sort of that specter looming like Palpatine, you know, what would be the result? How many people would go see this thing, especially after sort of the missteps of Last Jedi? Would that be something you'd agree to?
Oh yeah. I mean, people going to go see this movie or being drawn to go to the theater in the first place were like, okay, well, if it's either going to be one of two things. It's either going to be really good or it's going to be really bad, but either way, it's still going to end this whole thing, or as far as the Skywalker story. So at least it'll be that. If it's one or the other, regardless of which one it ends up, it's still the thing that I want to see what their attempt is going to add, like what was said just a second ago, capstoning the entire thing. So that was definitely half the draw, for people to go see it, other than whatever they wanted to see as far as endings for these 3, or for the new triad of characters that we were following in this trilogy in the first place. Yeah.
So as we get started with this conversation, for the sake of those who are listening in, I do want to say that this will be a review that will include spoilers. And so if you haven't seen the film, first of all, what have you been doing? Second of all, second of all, get out there and watch it. So if you're someone who doesn't like spoilers, this isn't the episode for you yet. Go watch the movie, then come on back. And, you know, we're not going to recap the entire film in its entirety, but we will be covering some key points as they pop up. If you have seen it, well, then strap in, because we're going to take a moment now to review, or take some time now to review, Rise of Skywalker, the final installment of the Skywalker saga portion of Star Wars. And that's one of the things that, for me, I want to start at the end, guys. And again, I thought the best way to approach this would be to not have a set format or outline. I just wanted the conversation to flow. And where I wanted to begin was, is there a cheat moment here where, because of the last line of this film, where they leave the door open for this Skywalker saga to continue somewhere down the road? Is that just me overthinking it, or is that something that you guys felt perhaps is a possibility?
I'll chime in on that and say, yeah. I think it depends on how you view the last scene. And I saw one review that hated the last scene because it zapped the entire saga of any hope. And it's like, well, that's not what the last scene is. I view the last scene as an epilogue. Okay, the last scene is an epilogue to, you know, 9 movies, and as such, I think it is a fantastic epilogue. I think it's absolutely, you know, it closes the circle. Now, to answer the question specifically, which is, does it leave open for additional movies? Yes. I mean, and I know that, you know, the saga is over. I think when they say that they're not doing any more movies with the Skywalker saga, I don't think they mean that we're never going to see these three characters again. I think what they're saying is, we're not, if we do another movie with these three characters, it will be a one-off. We're not going to be, you know, it's going to be a type of thing where it's just like, hey, you know, this is just another story that's going on. I don't think they're going to be looking to do trilogies again. So I think that we could potentially see another movie, and it certainly leaves it open to possibly, but I don't think if they do another movie, it will be with the understanding that the saga is over, and, you know, just here's, you know, something, another story we're telling that involves these three characters that wouldn't necessarily have the total draw in of all of the characters that we have seen throughout, you know, Palpatine, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. Nick, your thoughts in terms of that?
If they want, when it comes to them being able to maybe continue this, yes, they're definitely going to not have any more movies focusing on anything as far as the original Skywalkers or anything like that. That's going to be done with. If they do continue anything at all, I would say it's probably going to be something on Disney Plus, which it could totally lend itself to something that would be like a long form TV series, kind of like what The Mandalorian is doing right now. They could easily do something with Rey creating a new school of Jedi or what have you, you know, that, and her build up of that to the new space cops of the galaxy kind of thing. But as far as doing movies, it's already been like publicly said that the trilogy format is gone. That they're not doing that anymore. It's going to be one-off movies like going forward, if they even choose to remain with these original characters, which I don't know honestly that they will, given how the performance of the movies, if we're just going straight monetarily, has been speaking. The ticket intake has been speaking, and it's people like them, but it's like the tree is withering on these characters, I think. So unfortunate, yeah, as that is, because I like some of them, you know, so.
Yeah. Well, and I think that the advent of Disney Plus opens the door for people to, you know, if they are hedging their bets on this film, they know it's going to be on Disney Plus soon enough for them to go, you know, to be able to see it in the comfort of their own home if they have if they have the membership. And you're right. I think in the long term, the place to now have any future films or future, you know, series, I can picture something with, you know, along the same line as Marvel's pairing the Winter Soldier and
Bucky.
Oh geez, why can't I think of
Bucky?
Yeah, Bucky, but it's why can't I think of Anthony Mackie's character right now?
Falcon.
You know, if they have I would love to see a series of Poe and Finn going on adventures and stuff. That would be that would be entertaining.
I do want to refute one thing. The new trilogy has not been a failure or lacking in any way, shape, or form from the box office standpoint. I mean, the first movie is the number one Lifetime gross movie with, you know, 900 top domestic, 900 million. And so this is just domestic. And then, you know, The Last Jedi is number nine with 620. So, yeah, there was a dip from the 900 to the six, you know, to 620. But I don't see any reason why this movie wouldn't fall close to the 620 number. I mean, for the most part, people have liked these movies. So I don't see a reason why there's a belief that these have not been successful. So I do have a little bit of a nit to pick on that.
Yeah. I think the
and
idea
that's why
is that
I have you guys here.
Yeah, I'm going to say that again.
No, I'm saying this is why I know I'm looking forward to this conversation. Not that I'm trying to pitch you guys. It's just that the viewpoint, we come from different angles. In fact, let me just go ahead and say this. For myself, when I look at this film, I saw it through the lens of someone who has been following these movies since my youth. I'm one of those, you know, people that can say I remember seeing Star Wars, at least beginning with Empire, in the theater. I know I saw Star Wars, the first one. It wasn't in the theater. But every film subsequent to that, I've had the ability or the fortune to have seen it when it came out. And I only say that because that is the lens through which I watched this movie on Thursday. And that's why for me, the nostalgia factors, the cameo moments, the excitement of all the action, that's really what carried me through this, which is why I think I fall in the camp of those who feel it was successful. But because I looked at it from just a purely entertainment factor. And that's different from other people. So I think each of us bring a unique lens through which we saw the movie, and that's why our opinions will probably differ throughout the course of this conversation.
Yeah, and that's the lens I come at. Like, it's the first, The New Hope was the first movie I ever saw that I stayed awake through the whole thing. So, you know, I've been a fan since day one. So, you know, it has been captivating me since as long as I can remember going to see movies.
And so, Nick, not to put you on the spot, and so I hope you'll...
Please
you'll,
do.
Well, no, and I want to ask you, if you would, please.
Yep.
Can you explain your lens that you watched the movie from so that we have your perspective, too?
Yeah. When it comes to Star Wars, like, I'm a fan just like anyone else or whatever it is. I would say I'm not so much a fan that I would dress up as one of the characters like I am wont to do for other things, like say at a Comic-Con, which of course has happened. But I know Star Wars back and forth. I mean, I know the stuff from the old extended universe, some of the comic books, some of the old books. I mean, you and me were talking about a couple of days ago, the Thrawn trilogy books and stuff, and how baller those would be if those were ever made into a movie or even Disney Plus thing. I watched Star Wars. I mean, you guys saw it when it was in the theaters. I saw it. I saw Return of the Jedi when it was in the theaters. I distinctly remember that. And that was like 83, I want to say, I think. The original movies, I mean, I would watch the heck out of those on VHS. I remember specifically having this gold box Darth Vader head or helmet VHS box. It's like, ooh, but this time it's this time it was recorded in SP mode, so it's really clear. You know what I mean? I've always enjoyed Star Wars. I may not have seen the original one in the theaters, but I'm just as much a Star Wars fan as like anyone else who says that. Hey, I know if they can tell the difference between Star Wars and Star Trek, you know, I'm there or whatever.
Okay,
but
gotcha.
That's where I come from on it. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, as we get started, the thing that for me was just sucked me in completely right at the get-go was the opening sequence where Kylo Ren is, you know, on the search for the Wayfinder, and he's obviously, you know, wreaking havoc on this village. And it was right before that with the opening crawl. that for me solve things that won't be solved for a lot of people, and that is, you know, ooh, Palpatine is back, and how did this happen? It's an old serial approach that you don't necessarily have to have everything happen in front of you or have it explained, and I thought it was clever that they used the crawl to basically say this return of Palpatine isn't a mystery to anybody in the universe. It's some weird broadcast, you know. And so right from the get-go, I'll be the first to say that I let that suck me in. And everything subsequent to that, to me, was action, 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 which I loved. From the opening sequence of Kylo Ren, getting to the Wayfinder, the destruction that he wreaks, all the way through to the final battle. this movie, and I don't know if you guys will go with me on this, but as I sat there, I kept thinking, this feels like I'm watching Raiders of the Lost Ark. It's just constant action and adventure. And so that was sort of my initial impression as the film was going on, was like, I'm loving this because it is so much fun and so much action happening right from the start. As the movie began for you guys, talk a little bit about what your thoughts were and how you felt about, you know, how you felt as this film started to play out. And Nick, we'll start with you, and then Paul, if you'll throw in as well.
The opening crawl part was I kind of laughed at myself at the beginning because I was like, because the way it starts out, the dead speak, and I was like, okay, we're jumping, we're going there, we're there now. Okay, we're not even going to do that. In fact, you know what? That the broadcast that they talk about, it was actually recorded. Like, they actually recorded it. They just didn't put it in the movie. You know where they put it? They actually, it is, you can go and find it on YouTube now. They put it in the game Fortnite, that big battle royale game that everybody that is super popular. Mm-hmm. They did a Star Wars event where it was like J.J. Abrams and somebody else were like in it, and they were having a little event in the game where, like, all of a sudden there were like, even though the game has nothing to do with Star Wars, there were Star Destroyers and TIE Fighters flying around in the sky over the game world and everything. All of a sudden there was like John Williams music playing in the background, and then all of a sudden at a certain point you start hearing Emperor Palpatine's voice saying a bunch of these lines, and it goes for like maybe four sentences, but it's the broadcast that the opening crawl is talking about. But if you want to hear it, you got to hear it in the game, basically. But what you call it, as far as the opening of the movie, I dug the action, but the opening 10 minutes, almost 30 minutes of it, which we went to, we weren't even just sitting on that initial planet. We were there for maybe a minute from the time that Kylo Ren is mowing down those villagers and to the point where he gets the Wayfinder and the hidden castle or wherever it was. The opening of the movie was just, it wasn't exhausting. It was just like, where are we going? It just seemed like it was trying to do a lot. It was giving a Cliff Notes version of itself in the movie that it was about. It's like, okay, guys, here we go. Boom, 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 boom. It was, the editing was very annoying to me. And
okay.
Yeah, that's where it was for me.
Yeah, I'm with you, Sergio. I felt like this was an instance where the crawl was really important. Because there was, the crawl really set up the plot to an extent that it was like, if you didn't read the crawl, you are literally lost. But if you read the crawl, you know exactly what's going on. You know that that Kylo Ren is looking for Palpatine, and you see him mowing down people, and you're like, what is he mowing down people for? And then you find the Wayfinder that is clearly a map. And like, I feel like it was pretty self-explanatory once he found what he found. Like, if you show me a thing with a red blip on it, I'm going to just assume that's a map. You know, I think that's pretty clear. And so, it was, a map to what? Well, it's probably going to obviously be Palpatine, you know, because we know he's looking for Palpatine because he doesn't like the idea of somebody else encroaching on his power. I thought that the scene between Driver and you know Kylo Ren and Palpatine Ian there, I thought that was a really good scene, and it had an amazing callback to the prequels, which, you know, I'm not going to pretend are the best movies of all time, but you know, it had the callback, the callback of, you know, the dark side. Yeah, I mean, the dark side, yeah, right, paths, you know, that are, is a path to powers that are some deem unnatural. And so it's like, yes, perfect. And right there, that set the tone for me, because that sets the tone to let me know, yes, there are 8 movies before us, and we are going to be bringing all of them in, warts and all, if you want to mention the prequels. And we're going to talk, you know, there's stuff throughout all these movies that we have to talk about, and you know, not explicitly, but, you know, to at least make nods to, so that we know this, you know, this is what we're dealing with. This is the kind of thing we're dealing with. So, I loved it. I loved it. I loved this, the scene, there. And then obviously we're back with Rey and Leia, and who wouldn't want to get to see Leia training Rey? I mean, come on. Obviously we're not going to get to see, you know, Leia be as involved in the training, but at least, you know, whatever Rey's doing, it's at the behest of Leia. And so that, I love that too. Fantastic. I loved it. I was in, like you said. I was in hook, line, and sinker.
When it comes to the characters themselves, I feel like we, over the course of the 3 movies, obviously the character of Kylo Ren as the main villain, the Rey character that continues to be played so beautifully by Daisy Ridley. And then, you know, there's Poe and there's Finn. I feel like, you know, these are characters that when they were first introduced, I remember thinking to myself, I'm going to have to really get used to this, you know, not being about the characters that I grew up and, you know, loving. I really think that they all kind of came into their own in this film. Like I finally felt like they were 100% vested in their characters. And whatever trappings or dialogue or whatever that was given to them, they're going to do the best. I mean, because as is the case with Star Wars, there's dialogue that sometimes you're like, okay, that was really corny. But I don't know if you guys felt the same, but I felt like these characters kind of came into their own on this last film because they were given a lot of time together. And that's what I think was missing in the last film, at least. And that was one of the things that, for me, from a character standpoint, at least, if you look at those 4 characters, I felt like this was the most enjoyment I got out of their interaction throughout the course of the film. And of course, I think also that the characters of Kylo Ren and Rey really, I mean, home runs in terms of their interactions. So many unique things done with the whole plot point of, you know, him being able to see wherever she or, you know, seeing her where she was, even if they're not in the same place and vice versa. Some very unique things there done that, you know, like the he grabs the beads and has them analyzed. I mean, there's stretches here, obviously, in moments like that. But we got that. We got that in this last film when he, you know, is speaking to her when she's on Octo and his hand, you know, his glove was wet after, you know, encountering her in that setting. So, you know, there were just some things done there that were, it asks you to stretch your imagination, but I'm okay with it because of how well they had gotten to, how strong they are now when it comes to their own dialogue together and their character interplay and so forth. From a character standpoint, Paul, we'll start with you and then Nick. I want to get your guys' thoughts on, you know, these actors in this movie, and not just those 4, anyone who you want to talk about, who stood out to you? And who do you feel, you know, is a standout in this film, or even if you have issues with their portrayals?
Yeah, no, Daisy and Adam were I think it's fair to say clearly the best actors, straight up, just, you know, classic, you know, who's acting the best? You know, Adam Driver and Daisy Ridley were just heads and shoulders above everybody else, I thought, throughout, from Force Awakens all the way through. And that's not to belittle anybody else. It's just they are really good. And if you've seen any Adam Driver in anything else, you know that Adam Driver is really good. And I haven't seen Daisy Ridley in a lot of other things. However, you know, I have a feeling that she's going to have just fine of a career because she's really good, as much as, like, Natalie Portman in the Ewan McGregor in the prequels. They were clearly way better actors than everybody else on screen, to the point of, you know, actually making the other actors look bad, you know. And but I don't think that that was the case with these two, where they were clearly the best. I don't think that, you know, the John and Isaac necessarily are bad, and I don't think they look bad. It's just, you know, the other two are so good. But they carry the story, so they had to be good. So that's one thing they got right with this trilogy that I think the prequels got wrong, where Hayden Christensen just wasn't up for it. You know, I mean, he's not that good, you know, and I think that everything that you see him do, in the prequels tells you that, you know, especially when he's on screen with Natalie Portman, it's just like, ugh. You know, somebody's acting and the other person's a cardboard box, and it's, you know, it's just, you know, whereas here, and you know, to make allusion to The Last Jedi, as you did, you know, one of the strengths of The Last Jedi was the interplay between Kylo Ren and Rey, culminating in one of my favorite fight Star Wars fight scenes of all time, you know, in Snoke's office, we'll call it, you know. So, but one of the things that was lacking, as you mentioned also, was the main three, you know, good guy characters, the main three resistance characters never being on screen together for more than, you know, a minute and a half at a time. And I think that's something that this film, as you said, really fixed. And it was, you know, almost like a lesson learned that was like, look, separating them doesn't do anybody justice. You know, they have to be together. And even, you know, if you look at the original trilogy, when they're separated during Empire Strikes Back, my favorite of the whole saga, it's very much for a reason, and there's constantly still the connection where, you know, Luke is constantly being pulled to the trials and tribulations of Han and Leia. Whereas in Last Jedi, you don't, you know, when Daisy's off training, the connection is to Kylo Ren, which is fine and great, and again, a very solid part of that movie, but also it failed to bring in the other characters. And I think that to have all three of them working together, it really made up for a lot of lost time. And I think it did it successfully. I really bought that the three of them really had a connection, especially Poe Dameron and Finn. You know, I felt like, you know, they had more, you know, they had a very unique backstory too, just as far as how they first met and, you know, Finn saving Poe and all that sort of stuff. And just to see them sort of being, you know, buddies, you know, like I, you know, you mentioned it earlier, I'd love to see a Poe and Finn, you know, show much along the lines of the Winter Soldier and Falcon. So, you know, give it to me. I'd be in. And I thought that was really a strong point in this movie.
All right. Nick, from a character standpoint, your thoughts?
Yeah. I mean, I thought Daisy and Adam in all three movies were great. I thought they had their best. I thought they had their best interactions in when it came to any of the characters we were introduced to in the new trilogy. Daisy and Adam had their best work done as characters in the first and second movie, and more specifically Last Jedi, to me anyway. When it came to Poe, I think Poe himself in the previous two movies up to Last Jedi, and Finn had his best characterization, his best attempt in Force Awakens. In Last Jedi, in Last Jedi, Finn was wasted. I want to say in this movie too, Finn was more or less kind of wasted also. Not now that as far as their the job they did, it was by no fault of their own, because each one of them did what they could with what they had, for sure. In this movie, you can see that they definitely were, you know, as the time in the movie universe had gone by, they were now all friends and stuff like that, even though Daisy or Rey barely had an excuse to even know Poe in the second movie in the first place. She barely meets him at the very end of it, almost, if I'm not mistaken. But in the year or so canonically that this movie takes place afterwards, you can tell they're getting along as friends. They're arguing with each other as friends do. I think the characters, any kind of characterization, the best characterization for each of them, though, I think was done out before this movie happened. For Daisy and Adam, though, together, great job in all three, especially Last Jedi. Good job in this one. For the other two, their best characterization work was done in the previous two movies.
Okay. We're doing just brief hits on this stuff just to give people an impression of our thoughts on how successful the movie is or isn't. The next thing I want to talk about is effects. This whole saga has been about special effects from the point that, the first episode 4, was released in theaters. It was hailed for, you know, what now is, you know, pretty, basic special effects, but for its time, it was amazing. I remember this is back in the days of 8mm film, my cousin bringing over a reel that was the escape from the Death Star of the Millennium Falcon with Han Solo and Luke Skywalker when Luke first gets on the cannons. There was that little 8-minute sequence, and my cousin brought it over to show us. You know, he'd gotten a hold of this reel. And I remember thinking to myself, it's going to be amazing. And it was just like a promotional reel that was given out back then in the late 70s. All the way forward to where we are now, when we see, you know, the amazing spectacle that this film brings us in terms of effects, in terms of visuals and so forth. I mean, you know, yes, I have issues with, you know, how did they populate this Sith fleet, you know, that comes out of nowhere, basically, you know, there's so many things in hindsight that I'm like, wait a minute. So somebody had to put in job applications for all these people and, you know, staff this entire fleet of destroyers, Sith destroyers. But from
it's
a visual standpoint, what's that?
I said, it's all the
it's
kids.
All the kids
they kidnapped.
I guess so.
Explain in this movie.
Yeah. But you know, it was just such an awesome spectacle. You know, the last scene when all of the ships from all over the galaxy arrived, you know, we saw that for a brief moment in the trailer, and yet it looked fantastic to me. So I was very taken by the effects in this film and by the visuals. You know, Nick, we'll start with you this time. Just your thoughts on the success or maybe, you know, I hate to use the word failure, but opportunities that were presented. Does this movie live up? And in your opinion, what were some of its strengths and some of its opportunities?
Since you were focusing on it with regard to just the special effects, are we talking about?
Visual effects, you know, special effects, you know, anything regarding the visuals.
No, I didn't think there was any one of these movies, any one of the movies out of the nine, the effects have always been great. Of course, even George Lucas wanted to walk back some of that stuff in the late 90s when I was finishing high school, whenever he was doing the special editions of the original trilogy, which, you know, look good. And in some cases, like Return of the Jedi, have some parts that we wish would just not be in there at all. but the effects have always been good up to, say, the height of the time that they were made in, right? All three of these in the new trilogy, I have nothing to say wrong about the special effects in any way. No weird mistakes, no things that looked obviously bad that I can remember right off the top of my head. They were, each one of the trilogies were, say, representative of the height of the technology at their time. And this was just another example of it. It was knockout stuff to look at for sure.
Were there any particular scenes that were favorites or that you sat there, you know, and you brought out from it going, hey, that was memorable?
Golly. I want to say whenever we first make our way to, oh gosh, what was it? The Sith planet X. I keep on forgetting what the
Exegol.
Last name Exegol is. Whenever we're getting there in the finale of the movie, not at the beginning, whenever Adam first or Kylo first gets there, or whenever we're first arriving there for the climax of the film, and the whole, wacky navigation that Rey needed to use to get there in the first place, because it's dangerous to get there. There's all kinds of like black holes and red matter and all this stuff everywhere. I thought that the arrival scene for her at Exegol was really, really nice looking.
All right. Paul?
Yeah. And I loved everything. I love the effects on Exegol. I thought the effects really added to the just the chaotic nature that you would expect on a Sith planet with the lightning and basically the strobe effect, that which was why they had to have the disclaimer at the start of the movie. I thought the strobe effects just really tied all of those scenes, particularly the close-up scenes with Palpatine. I thought it just really brought forth the tone of those scenes so well. And it just was, almost sickening. I mean, it really is sickening to see this, this monstrosity that is Robo Palpatine, having to be carried around on a mechanical arm, and literally only being alive through the mechanical arm and just such an extreme of what was going on with Darth Vader. And the constant lightning and everything, it really added to everything going on Exegol. Beyond that, the one thing that I loved about all of the new trilogy is we'll call it the Rey trilogy, I guess. My favorite part about the Rey trilogy was the character, the alien characters that they've been sprinkling throughout. That when you see A New Hope, that's one of the awesome things that the Tatooine, the saloon. That's when you were a kid, that's one of the things that you remembered the most. And I felt like that was something that was severely lacking in the prequels. And I didn't think that any of the new races or anything that they did were particularly intriguing or well done. Whereas I thought for this trilogy, I really liked all of the alien character development, and it carried over. Every turn, every stop, every planet they visit brings you a new alien race, and it's always just really intriguing. And I thought this movie carried that tradition on as well.
Especially that most of them in this new trilogy were actually practical, or they purposely tried to do them practical effects, like puppetry and that sort of thing, as opposed to just doing them CGI out the wazoo like the tried to do with the prequel trilogy. But they actually tried to make them, whenever they could do them practically, they did them practically, and they just looked better and acted better because of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. For me, it was the visuals of not just the characters, but the costuming, like the Knights of Ren. I wish that we would have gotten more interplay or more story there, but I loved the menace that they present in the way that they're presented. As little as we see them, they had a great impact in the scenes that they were in, particularly the last scene where they encounter, or I should say Kylo Ren encounters them, Ben Solo by this point. And I didn't know how that fight scene was going to play out. Like, I had that sort of moment of like, oh no, he doesn't have his saber, like what the heck. And so I loved that whole fight scene.
From a visual standpoint.
And then the callback to you know, everything that's been going on between their connection. I totally didn't expect it, and it was just so great. That was a great payoff moment.
Yeah, I agree. There was the you know, we've all talked about the Sith planet Exegol and the way in which it was presented, and you know, all of the shadowy, you know, figures in the crowd, and it showed you a piece of the Sith lore, so to speak, that you didn't ever get to see before, because at least to myself, the Sith was always, you know, the rule of two, and yet there's still something here that's beyond Palpatine. That was, you know, all of this mass of creatures or whatever they were, because you never really fully saw them. But it was so dark, and I mean, you know, menacing, dark, and threatening. The feel that was presented through the visual effects and the music, and you know, Ian McDiarmid is a treasure. Here's a guy who, you know, this is going to be the only role that he'll be known for, unless you really know that. He's a very well-trained theater actor. He's won Tonys and all kinds of other awards. He chewed the scenery, as they say. And I was pointing out to Nick a few days ago that if you think about it, the Emperor doesn't ever appear in physical form until the third film of each cycle. And, you know, to see him in this one, in the condition that he's in, and the evolution of his character, you know, throughout the film itself, it was brilliant. I loved it. It's the most. And as I was listening to you guys, I kept thinking to myself, this is the Sithiest it's ever been for me in 9 movies. Like, yeah. I really felt like we were in a Sith environment.
Yeah, all the other aliens, I mean, the whole rule of two thing still applies or whatever, because all those other, all the hooded everybody's who were walking around and filling up those grandstands, which good architectural work there, because he knew that, oh, something bad's going to go down at some point because I foresee everything. So I'm going to make this the grand hall where everyone's going to get to watch me be you know, come back as a boss, obviously. But what was it? They were all roadies. They were all Sith roadies. That's all they were. They were just like, hey – because they're not Sith, they're not actual Sith. They're roadies. They're all like, we're into this. They're the crew. You know, hey, somebody's got to build that uncomfortable looking chair that he can't even sit in. So,
well, and I thought it was interesting because it was really the first time that we got to sort of learn about Sith fanatics during the actual saga, because. You know, we know that there are Jedi fanboys, you know, just Maz Kanata is one, and then obviously, you know, the whole planet of what was it called in Rogue One? Jeddah, is that right?
Jeddah.
You know, that whole planet is basically Jedi roadie, you know, to use your term, Jedi roadies. So there's, you know, the Jedi and the Sith mirror each other so much that you assume that there were Sith, you know, fanboys, but you never actually got to see it and to actually see it and just to realize, yeah, they're out there and they're kind of creepy as all get up and go. I really appreciated that. I really appreciated that was one really new aspect of the universe that this film brought in. I like that.
Yeah, definitely a lot that I took away from it in terms of enjoyment of scenes and you know, the narrative in terms of, you know, not learning more, but seeing that whole ceremony that they were doing as Palpatine was going to describe what Rey was going to do and what was about to happen. I mean, it was just so creepy and so awesome that those are the kind of moments that for me really stood out. All right, so what I want to do now at this point, guys, is I want to make sure that each of us have the opportunity to just tell our thoughts on the film. And so what I'm going to do, guys, is we're going to do 5 minutes apiece, and there's no question except for this. And Nick, if you don't mind, I'm going to have you lead us, lead out first, and then Paul, and then myself. It's five minutes, guys. Your thoughts, good, bad, indifferent, success, not a success, what are your thoughts? I'm turning the table over to you, Nick, and then Paul, you'll go second, and then I'll go third. Just vent. What are your thoughts on Rise of Skywalker? Nick,
your time starts now.
But whenever we say, just before the time starts, are we talking spoilers not yet at all, right?
Oh, no, spoilers or not. It's up to you. This is your time to manage however you see. And if anybody exceeds five, I'm not going to be like the podcast cop. But
right. Okay. Podcast cop. He'll do it too. Nicely. Okay. Man, I really wanted to like this movie. I really, really did. Even my girlfriend wanted to. I mean, she likes Star Wars too. But man, like, 30, I'll tell you right now, 30 minutes into this movie, if even that long, she turns to me and says, a year ago, I was sitting in a theater watching Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. I wish I was watching it right now because it's that bad. And it's not even that the movie is, because there's some people who might say the movie was moving too fast for me. I couldn't understand what's going on. It's like, no, we could understand what was going on. It's the fact that it was just being done very badly. It's like there's no way that anyone can convince me that Palpatine was meant to be the main bad guy of this trilogy from the word go. At all. It's been known for a long time that whenever the new trilogy was started, that Kathleen Kennedy basically said, you know, we're going to give it to a couple of directors. They're going to do whatever they want. There's no overarching anything that was created from the beginning, and they could just fill in holes where they wanted to. But there's a middle and ending that has been plotted for this overall story and for these characters we want to introduce. But the directors can do whatever they want within the confines of this overarching story that we are fashioning. That was never done. This trilogy, as unfortunate as it is, was made ad hoc at the moment based on the whims of each director. And this entire movie was basically JJ trying to undo everything that The Last Jedi did, and purely because of purely because Star Wars fans said The Last Jedi was garbage for the most part. The entire movie was an apology, and it's trying to do as much as it can in a 2.5 hour time period. And it's very obvious from the editing. We understand what's going on. It's just that the way that it's being told is like somebody who's been put on speed and is just like, let me tell you about a movie called Star Wars. Lots of interesting things could have happened in this movie, but nothing was given any time to actually happen in a way that would have been more satisfying. The editing was bad. The way it was conveying the story, and we were doing, you know, the classic Star Wars visual wipes when we were going to another location or whatever. I don't even remember how many of them happened in the first 20 minutes of the movie, especially when all of a sudden we introduce what's this light speed skipping thing that Poe was doing with the Falcon at the beginning of the movie. But just halfway through the movie, it was like I didn't have almost any hope that it was going to end well anymore, and it was really seeming like the reviews were just dead on about everything, because at a certain point I just didn't even care what was going on anymore. For instance, there were a lot of moments that were, I love that because it was nostalgia. Hey, Lando's back. I could tell when Lando was about to appear because, you know, whenever they're in that desert planet that's having the big block party or whatever, once every 40 years or whatever, you could tell when Lando was about to show up, and it was great. And when Lando shows up, it's great. The final battle at the end, when the Falcon comes back leading all of the, you know, what was it, the core planets, the core systems, cavalry coming in, and we see Wedge Antilles, who's in the gunner seat of the Falcon for that one split second scene there, which was like, me and Sergio both looked at each other for that second, and he was like, did you see that? I was like, I saw that. That was the shit. That was great. But it's a bunch of little things, a bunch of little scenes, little heavy lean-ins to nostalgia over and over again that were trying to mask how badly this movie was trying to close out not only the entire nine movies, not only its own trilogy, but how badly it was trying to apologize for episode 8. It was like it was doing everything it could to apologize for episode 8, and it even walked back all of the interesting things that came out of episode 8 that really could have done some really cool different stuff with the story, like where we walk back all of a sudden Rey is not in episode 8 she's told you're nobody, you had this whole hope about your parents being somebody or you being special, you're nobody, you know, which gives the idea, hey, you don't have to be part of the magic space family to be worth something. Anybody could be worth something. Anybody could rise up and be part of this great thing called the Force, which is supposed to be part of everything in the first place anyway. It has nothing to do with lineage. You can make your own path, and the past doesn't matter. You know, kill the past if you can. That whole thing that Kylo goes on in Last Jedi. But then that's all walked back when now not only is she part of a magic space family, she's Palpatine's granddaughter, which really we were trying to make up any way that we could explain her being a Mary Sue. And it's not because, oh, she's a girl. There have been, there are plenty of strong women in Star Wars, Princess Leia being one of, being the very first one and stuff. I have no problem with that, but I had a problem with the fact always that she just knew how to use the Force from the word go. And with almost no training, we explain that we show that she's been training for the last year or so under Leia at the beginning of this movie, which I really liked. I really liked the fact that they were showing the fact that she's training really hard. She's training with Leia of all people. Hey, we even get to see that Leia actually trained with Luke to answer all those people that were like, why is she Mary Poppins in the second movie? You don't think that in 30 years she would have actually trained with Luke, which we now see that she did. But a lot of the things in this movie were just masking the fact that it was a story that we were pulling out of our butts because we had 2 years to make this movie and we needed to apologize to all of the fans that didn't like episode 8 and that it's not everything that episode 8, basically everything that it tried to say is BS. Forget all that stuff. No, you have to be part of the magic space family to be worth anything. Oh, by the way, the main bad guy, he was the main from the previous three trilogies. Guess what? He's back. For what reason? It doesn't matter. Hey, the dark side of the Force does weird crap. That's why he's back, which to me was woefully unsatisfying. Yes, it's a callback to the original trilogy, to the prequel trilogy, but that doesn't satisfy anything for me. It's like, okay, yeah, unnatural. Yeah, the dark side does weird crap. I'm back, lol, so what? Oh, by the way, also the guy who was the bad guy in the previous two movies, yeah, I'm him, which also seemed like JJ trying to double get back at Rian Johnson, because it's like it felt like JJ saying, no, actually I'll decide that Snoke's not important before you, so actually he's double less important because I made him, and now I'm saying, oh no, but he was fake, but here's the reason why he was worthless, because I cloned him, and there's a couple of clone Snokes in the tank kind of thing. Why didn't we have maybe all the roadies were all just clone Snokes? We never got to see their faces, so maybe that was the case. And that would have been cool. And maybe all of those Star Destroyers were helmed by clone Snokes and the stolen children or whatever that they had been talking about. I know I'm going all over the place with it, but the movie was just so bad in a number of ways to me. Character wise, it was a waste for Finn and Poe. There was no development at all in these characters in the third movie. There was no really good growth for any of them. Adam Driver and Daisy, sure. I dug their stuff. Where they ended up to the very end, where we're pulling Force powers out of our butt to explain what they're doing, they're a dyad in the Force. They're special link that's only seen once and forever. That's how I'm just going to write. We're going to create a reason why we need to have the give them the ability to get out of trouble. So we're just going to make them special in the Force for no reason whatsoever. Other than just saying they're special in the Force. You know, Palpatine's plan. I need you to kill me. Or, hey, Kylo, I need you to go kill her. But, hey, Daisy, I really need you to kill me so I can win. But then I'm going to just kill you both because, hey, I realized I can actually stick around and not have to turn into Empress, you know, Empress Rey. And then, like, that scene where we see, what is it? Because I'm just hitting everything that I can think of off the top of my head. The cool
am I going to get 10 minutes to I just want to make sure I get my 10 minutes too.
Yeah. I'm waiting.
Okay, thanks.
Hey, Sergio, where are we at? Come on. It's already been 5, hasn't it?
You're at 11 minutes.
Yeah.
No, I am not. You stop that.
Yes, you are. You really are.
Shut up. It has not been that long. Oh, goodness.
It has.
Anyway. The movie was
bad. It's
hard
to land the plane, I get it.
No, I know. This movie was just bad in a story way. It disserviced the characters, and I'm sorry for it. Cool things could have been done. Good things could have been done, even with the way that with what they tried to do. But it was trying to tell what should have been two movies in one, and one of those two undone movies was trying to undo the last one. It was an apology. The movie was an apology tour to get back the goodwill of the Star Wars, the core Star Wars fans that B&M'd about Episode 8. And I'm sorry that this was the way that the Skywalker story ended, because it just seemed it was nostalgia played up hard to apologize for it. And it was then told in a bad way. So that's 12 minutes ended now.
Absolutely. All right, good. And thank you. I appreciate your thoughts on that. All right, Paul, 12 minutes, go.
All right, so I'm going to start my 12 minutes with a quote from Luke from Last Jedi. Everything you just said is wrong. So here's the deal, and this is coming from a fan of The Last Jedi. I really liked The Last Jedi. I thought it was fantastic. And I thought there was some apology. I would say the primary apology that it did was when Luke said, you know, I came to this island out of fear and I was wrong. And that was clearly an apology, because Mark Hamill hated what they did with Luke in Last Jedi, and the fanboys hated what they did with Luke in The Last Jedi. I didn't. I thought it was great. However, I also do think that part of the reason why he went to isolate himself on the island was because of fear. And I thought it was, I don't think he should have apologized for that. It was good that he recognized it. I'm going to go ahead and go back to the start now. So, okay. Firstly, the idea that the big bad guy that was pulling the strings, the puppet master, if you will, that was pulling the strings of every single event that had been happening within the galaxy, and not, you know, we're talking macro here, not micro, but macro here. The person who's been pulling the strings of every single event within the galaxy since Episode 1, the first 5 seconds of Episode 1, Phantom Menace, the idea that suddenly, why would he be involved in this one, is laughable to me. It is absolutely absurd that anybody would come in and say, Palpatine's dead. How could he be pulling the strings? That's ridiculous. No, what's ridiculous is the idea that he's not pulling the strings. What's ridiculous is that you watch anything going on in any Star Wars movie and you don't instantly think, what's Palpatine's role in this? Because that's what he is. He is the master manipulator. Do I need to know how they brought him back to life? No, I don't. It doesn't matter. Because ultimately, we know his power. We know what he does, which is manipulate people. And we know that you're not going to have the First Order without Palpatine. I mean, could you possibly have watched the first two movies in this trilogy and not thought, what's Palpatine's role? Next, Daisy Ridley. Okay, so, saying that she's the daughter of Palpatine is an apology. Bullshit. I'm sorry. That's bullshit. It's not an apology. If you heard Kylo Ren say to Daisy Ridley in Last Jedi, your parents were meaningless, they weren't anybody, and you believed that, that's just a showing of your naivete of what you want this saga to be about. Because the saga is about the Palpatine and Skywalkers. That's what the saga is about. And to claim that, you know, Daisy Ridley's a better character for having not been involved in that family, bullshit is laughable. I mean, it's laughable to me that you would listen to anything Kylo Ren said, you know, the episode after he just killed his father, and think, oh well, he's a good guy. He's not gonna mislead Daisy Ridley and Rey and mislead her in any way, shape, or form to make her downplay her own past. I mean, it's ridiculous to me. This idea that, you know, what Kylo Ren says about Daisy Ridley's or Rey's past is you know, the end all be all of what, you know, what her character arc was planned to be, it's absurd. Of course she was, her parents were important. Of course. Why? Because they made it evident in the first episode of the Rey trilogy that it was important. You don't make something important and then just say, no, fuck that, that's not important, and then have it come back in the third episode and turn out to be important and say, well, they told me it wasn't important in the second one, so it can't be important. I mean, it's absurd to me. Next, this idea that none of the characters developed. With Finn, so basically what we're saying is they're taking this idea that actually was born out with Star Wars Rebels. You know, so Star Wars Rebels, you know, they're recruiting young people throughout the galaxy to be the next, you know, the next stormtroopers. You know, and I think there's more than enough implications in Star Wars Rebels to indicate that not all of these kids actually want to be recruited as stormtroopers. Like, so we know that they're going out and getting kids. Another thing we know, there are people that have the Force in them, throughout the galaxy. And if you get rid of all of the people that have the Force that are going around the galaxy recruiting, Force sympathetic characters, people, you're going to start recruiting Force-sympathetic people into, or, you know, conscripting Force-sympathetic people into the ranks of the Stormtroopers. I mean, that's going to happen. And I thought that was a huge nod to everything that's happened throughout the saga in giving Finn, Force-sympathetic abilities. And I thought that was a huge character development for him. I loved that they brought in this idea that, you know, that there was a whole battalion of people that, that dropped their phaser, you know, dropped their weapons when they were brought in to, you know, to destroy a planet. I love that. And I love that the reason why they did is because they're being led by somebody who's like, yeah, you know what? I just got a feeling that this is wrong. And where's that feeling coming from? It's coming from the Force. And so now we have this development for Finn where he is now, you know, potentially a candidate to be trained as a Jedi if you know, the next trilogy would so desire to do that. I mean, it would make sense. Why? Because he's got a feeling. I mean, this is the Force working through him, and we know that that's what the Force does. The Force works through people and to have its will done and to make sure that there's a balance. And I loved that, and I thought it was a great development of that character. And Poe, to learn a little bit about him, as far as, you know, he was at one point a spice runner, you know, basically, you know, a smuggler, and then he joined in with the rebellion and the resistance, and that was fantastic, and I loved that too. I thought that the development between Rey and Kylo Ren was something that The Last Jedi really staked its entire movie on. And I thought that this movie did not apologize for that. It actually recognized the strength of that and built on it. I thought that every interaction between Kylo and Rey was a absolute masterclass in how you develop something and develop something and develop something until you have the payoff where there, you know, one of the people is in a bad way and needs help. And Rey reaches out through the force connection between the two of them and delivers that help. Now, do you want to be mad because there's now this dyad thing and it's never been mentioned before? All right, that's fine. But you have to blame The Last Jedi. You have to blame the one before it because that's the movie that introduced the concept. Now, did they come out and say it? No, they didn't come out and say it. But that's where the concept was – that's where the seed was planted. Right then and there, the seed was planted there. And I would almost go back and say the fact that Kylo knew about Rey at all and, you know, in The Force Awakens and knew about her and you know, goes absolutely apeshit when they – you know, when he finds out that she got away and is constantly chasing after her indicates that really throughout – this is what we were building up to. Now, the Palpatine, you know, first wanting to be killed and then saying, no, you know, forget it. I don't need you anymore. They explain that away. They didn't explain it away, but they explain it in the movie when he actually sucks the life essence out of them. He doesn't need them anymore. Like, originally, he, you know, I'm sorry, I'm like out of breath. Originally,
well, and
that's
a good moment for me.
What, I mean, originally,
yeah. And
I,
just
I
real
like,
quick, Paul.
Yeah.
Just real quick, Paul. Just so you know, you're on 2 minutes. So
I know. I got a clock. I'm looking at it.
Okay, good.
Originally, the it was obvious why he needed her to kill him. All right, he needed her to kill him because he couldn't do everything he would need to do in his current corporal form. He needed a stronger corporal form. So the way he saw it right then and there is, well, the easiest way for me to get corporal form is Rey strikes me down in anger, okay? That's a huge theme in the Star Wars movies. Rey strikes me down in anger, turns to the dark side in acting in anger, and then I can then take over that form and be in that body because she has turned over to the Sith because she struck me down in anger. However, he finds another way to strengthen his corporal form, and that is, you know, through this dyad that exists. And he can use the strength of the two to strengthen himself, the one, and now he can keep his own corporal form. And then why can Rey kill why can Rey kill Palpatine in the end and not, you know, fulfill his desire of having her kill him? Because she doesn't fucking kill him. He killed himself with his force energy lightning thing, and she repels it back onto him. She doesn't strike him down in anger. He's striking back at her in anger, and she bounces it right back at him and zaps him to death. That's exactly what happened to him in the third movie, in the third prequel. It's exactly it is another callback. He was shooting at Mace Windu. The Sith electric bolt thing, and it bounced right back at him and practically killed him, and it completely corrupted his form, his physical presence, because of that coming back at him. So yeah, if he kills himself, and Rey happens to be the bouncing block for that, that's not Rey killing him. And oh, this is ridiculous. How could you? Why would he want Rey to kill him, and now Rey's killing him, and now it's not good? Because fucking Rey doesn't kill him. It's just the negative criticism of this is, in my mind, everything I've read and heard up until now has been, I don't personally like the way this happened. This is the way it sounds to me. I don't personally like the way that this was played out, so therefore this is silly that this is the way it's played out, except that it all has purpose, and it all is, you know – if the number one goal of this movie was to wrap up 9 movies,
mm-hmm.
It succeeded in aces and spades. It just absolutely accomplishes that goal very poetically. Not beautifully and not brilliantly, but very poetically. And I think this movie needs to be commended for that. There.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Paul.
Yeah.
All right.
15 minutes.
And that's the thing is if there's anything I love about doing this show, it's that I always want people to have passion about what they're talking about. You guys know the format of this show has always been bringing people on to talk about movies and things they want to talk about. And you guys both have done that. So I appreciate that. So with my time, I'm not going to take 12 minutes, but I am going to say a few things because for me, you guys, I think probably have not probably, let me restate. You guys have a far stronger fandom in terms of understanding this Star Wars world than I do. I know that from my conversations with Nick and Paul, the conversations you and I've had, and then listening to you both tells me that you appreciate the fandom. I've seen the movies. I have read books. But not as, you know, not very many. I know you guys mentioned, I think, Nick, it was you that mentioned the comic series that are out there. I started watching.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I started reading the very first thing when you first introduced me to the Marvel Online was the Darth Vader series.
Yep.
And so you guys are pulling from a far deeper well in terms of your passion for this genre and this particular story. For me, I think the reason I felt the movie was successful goes to back what I said in the beginning of the show, and that is that I was watching it from the lens of the story and watching, knowing in my head that this was to be the final episode of this Skywalker saga. I mentioned on my social media the day after it was the night of the movie after it was over, I talked about how, and Nick, you and I have talked about this a lot, how this was the year of things closing out. Game of Thrones, the Marvel Avengers, you know, movies and so forth. At least, you know, the first major cycle, right? And
right.
Star Wars, for me, guys, the Rise of Skywalker was the last of that. And so in a year in which I've seen things end, for me, I was very pleased with this film. And I've read a ton of articles, both for and against. And what I'm glad for is the fact that I got to see it. I got to see it to its end, and the fact that it just made me happy. Like from beginning to end, that point when I turned to Nick, when Wedge Antilles is sitting in the gunner, I read an article this morning, guys, where it's talking about it's one of those like real brief internet articles. And it was talking about how, you know, major character has a cameo that nobody knew about or that was missed by all. And it was about Wedge. And it even said, you know, in some, you know, Wedge Antilles was sitting in some unknown ship. And I'm like, it was the Falcon. Like, what do you mean unknown?
Yeah.
I mean, so everyone is going to have their thoughts and everyone's going to, you know, render opinions. I just land on the fact that when this movie was over, I was just so satisfied with the action, satisfied with the story, satisfied with the nostalgia. And this is nothing to say that you're not, guys. I view myself as a fan of this story, and I, you know, Nick will tell you, Paul, I can let go of any number of reality based, you know, or logic based things when it comes to me watching film. It's why he and I often debate when it comes to films. And so, I really loved this movie because it allowed me to escape. And for however long it was, it didn't feel that way. It didn't feel like it was a long movie. And I'm actually, to sum my thoughts up, I'm actually going to trade out one of my five movies on my annual movie marathon. And I'm probably going to watch this movie again on Saturday. So, again, a lot can be said about whether it's successful or not. And that's the thing that I think is going to drive people's opinions is their own viewpoint of what this should have been or what it could have been. So I'm very pleased. Now, what I am going to end with in terms of wrapping up our time together is the traditional rating of the film. You guys you guys have been on the show with me. You know how this goes. We use a five taco scale for Rise of Skywalker, and everyone's opinion is valuable and valid. So five tacos is the highest you can give a movie unless you want to give it guac. You can add that to the top off. So Rise of Skywalker, Paul, in your opinion, give us your rating on a five taco scale and just tell us a little bit about why.
Okay, I'm going to give it 4 tacos, and I'm also going to break the rules and give the 4 tacos guac. So I know that's reserved for 5 tacos usually, but I'm breaking the rules a little bit. So I give it 4 tacos because, yes, in spite of the fact that I really enjoyed the movie and it did definitely gave me the warm fuzzies throughout, there were problems with it. There were pacing problems for sure. The scenes with Leia felt cobbled together, but because they had to be cobbled together, and that kind of made me like I was very focused in on that, and it made me sad. It was like these are cobbled together scenes because they had to be cobbled together, and it's kind of sad. But I give it the guac because it had to do something that you could not envy any other filmmaker, which was to wrap up 9 movies in 1 movie. And I felt like it did that. Its second goal was to make sure that it gave Leia a departure that was fitting not only to her, but also worked within the context of everything else that had happened before it. And I felt like it accomplished that as well, especially since I felt like her departure was a major callback to Last Jedi and the way Luke passed. I felt like that was a very satisfying ending for her, and that's where it gets the guac for me, is just it in spite of some of the problems it had, and I will admit that there were definitely problems, although none of them were related to the fact that things didn't end exactly the way that I would have liked to have seen them, or because they didn't explain everything perfectly. It's just that there were pacing problems, and so I'm not going to give something 5 stars with those kind of problems, but I am going to give it 4, and I'm going to add the guac because of the Herculean effort that it needed to accomplish.
All right, so Darth Paul weighs in 4 tacos plus guac for Star Wars Rise of Skywalker. Nick Kramer, if you would, give us your rating.
I am going to say 2. It's a 2. There were interesting things that happened in the movie. Things that I wish they would have actually paid themselves off. The thing where, for instance, where Finn decided, hey, there's something I got to tell you. Oh wait, but I'm not going to tell you now. And it was leaned into very heavily towards the end of the movie that he's force sensitive, not that he loves her, because that would have been really stupid. But things like that, that were very obviously trying to be told, that unfortunately we just went nowhere. To me, and even to my girlfriend, a lot of bluster, but no substance unfortunately. And that's just going for what it tried to do with the story, as apart from things like the basic filmmaking, the pacing and what have you, that were just very, very bad. It brought some interesting things that could have been paid off on, or that could have been actually developed in the first place, but it was spending too much of its runtime trying to tell story that would have been good had it been had more time to breathe, but it was spending too much of its time trying to say, hey, remember when we were cool? This is we're like that thing again, right? That's essentially all I've got about it. Honestly, I wanted it to be good. I wanted it to be a fine movie. And it's not that it didn't end the way that I wanted to. It's not that at all. It's just that it didn't. It wasn't satisfying in what it was trying to do, capstoning the entire 9 trilogy of trilogies, capstoning its own trilogy. It just was a lot of bluster with no substance to it. It breaking its own internal rules, making things up on the fly for the sake of progressing to the next scene. But hey, hashtag Raylo, right? There you go. It's 2 for me.
All right. So all right. 2 taco rating for Nick Kramer. I'm going to land on 4 solid tacos. The 5 for me is it doesn't quite get there for me. I loved the movie. I enjoyed it very much, and I would see it again. But I think where it falls short for me, and Nick, you actually hit on this. I thought I was the only one that was going to talk about this. And that is the unresolved points. I literally was left towards the end of the movie going, he was going to tell her something. Are we never going to find out? And then we never found out. Because I need to see it. Like for me, myself, that has to be a payoff. There were moments like that for me were like, okay, it's like we threw something in and then it didn't quite play out. As much as I love the action, as much as I love the visuals and so forth, I did have a bit of an issue with the pacing. It was very fast. It kept me interested, and I like movies that do that. But at the same time, there were issues of like, okay, I need to breathe here for a second, and this movie isn't letting me do that. Where I feel it was successful is I bought the storytelling. I bought the I didn't need a lot of things explained to me, and that's always been my view of movies is if I can put two and two together here and there, I'm okay. I just really felt that what really made this a great experience for me was feeling like I have gotten to see the completed story, and it was entertaining, which is what I wanted to expect from the prequel movies, didn't quite get it. But I remember thinking to myself when Empire and Jedi came out, it was just it was an adventure. That's the thing that I wanted this movie to be about, and it really was. From the light skipping or the light speed skipping forward, I was just totally in. And like I said, I sat there going, this reminds me of Raiders of the Lost Ark and just the constant adventure pacing of the film. And that really, really gave it a lot of weight. For me to give it 4 solid tacos, Rise of Skywalker, the final installment of the Skywalker saga for the Star Wars franchise. So, guys, thank you for bringing such diverse views. I know that I've always enjoyed talking to each of you about movies and so forth, and I just thank you guys very much for allowing the three of us to talk about this on this show. So, Darth Paul, as always, thank you so much for joining me, and I know that we'll be doing this again in the future.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me and letting me actually inviting myself on. I appreciate it. I do.
Absolutely. And Nick Kramer, your passion, buddy, you know I've always loved it. You and I, we don't always land on the same page on stuff, but I tell you what, I love hearing you talk about stuff. And I thank you for taking another turn on the podcast scene with me here on Reel to Reel.
Right on, anytime.
All right. Well, on behalf of both Darth Paul and Nick Kramer, to all of you who took a moment to listen in on this episode of Reel to Reel, we thank you so much for doing that. Once again, if you've gotten to the end of this conversation and you haven't seen the film, well, go see it anyway and, you know, formulate your own thoughts and let us know what you think. If you have seen it, no matter what you thought about it, we know that as fans of the franchise, it was something that you probably enjoyed. Overall, we hope. But with that being said, who knows what happens now? The Star Wars franchise now in the hands of Disney and Disney Plus.
And the Baby Yoda.
I do want to share this because one of the things that Nick said to me as we came out of the theater was like, I think your words were, at least we have the Mandalorian. So I think it's time for me to start watching that show, Nick.
You haven't even watched it at all?
Oh, not yet. I'm waiting for
this dude.
Paul, are you in it?
But see, he gets to say that this was but he gets to say that he really liked this movie because it was Star Wars, and regardless of its faults, it's like, dude,
I want to be
Mandalorian
the whole
is best Star Wars. Mandalorian is best Star Wars. Man, go watch that stuff.
No, I
it's
need to.
Really
I just,
good.
Paul, are you watching it?
Oh my God, yeah. I wanted to I feel like we missed out on our disclaimer at the start of the show where we let everybody know that we were not going to talk about Baby Yoda. I mean, I still feel like anybody who sees anything Star Wars out there is just going to expect some obligatory discussion on Baby Yoda. So, yeah, it's fantastic.
Real quick thing before we started, there's you know how on Instagram or Facebook you see those little ads for, hey, buy this shirt or whatever it is, and usually it's like some fan drawing or whatever it is. Well, and two things. First of all of those ads for those t-shirt places, it's all stolen fan art on Twitter anyway. They just use bots to grab images and then play them to a shirt and then say, hey, want to sell this, when it's not even the actual artist making any money. It's just the shirt company. Second thing, before we started today, there was a t-shirt ad that came up on my Facebook that was it was Baby Yoda drinking out of a Whataburger cup, styrofoam cup, with a big Whataburger W logo behind him, right? I was so like, oh no, you don't, on this, because I knew it was obviously stolen. It was fan art, duh, but it's stolen fan art, and also it's also encroaching upon Whataburger's, you know, do not tread on me copyright. So I went ahead and copied the link to the store, got to Whataburger's Facebook page, direct messaged them and said, hey guys, you might want to C&D this, and sent them the link. Not 3 minutes later, they replied back to me and said, thank you very much, we've notified our legal team. I was like, because as was done in another series, I will kill everyone in this room and myself to protect that baby.
Hey, if you see a similar thing where he's at In-N-Out, can you, before contacting In-N-Out, let me know so I can buy the shirt first?
Sure thing.
Great. Awesome. All right.
All right. Well, maybe somewhere down the road we'll talk Mandalorian, but I will be starting that soon. Nick, you know I need to have all episodes before I'll – because I like to binge.
So you have to wait then.
Well, in that case, then you should jump on Netflix and watch The Witcher that just came out, because you just bought video game.
See?
You need to watch that, because it is the business. It's
and
really
find
good.
The Watchmen. Find The Watchmen, too, because that's,
oh, yeah,
that's wrapped up, too.
Oh, that was glorious, too. Quick thing about Witcher, since you're going to watch that, Sergio, a report on the same page that I just showed you a little while ago, which was apparently where you got the Wedge article from, Henry Cavill, apparently this is from the special effects team that made the costumes and everything for The Witcher. Apparently Henry Cavill's muscles were such that they were wearing down the leather of the costume that they had to remake them while they were filming, because that boy, you know what I mean? It's like maybe he just needed to stop recocking his arms from like the last Mission Impossible movie, because, dude, he's wearing down the costumes as he's wearing them. And that's from the production team that made the show. What the hell?
Well, yeah. That is something my clothes will never suffer from. So, all right. Well, hopefully down the road, the three of us can get together again and talk more about movies and shows. Again, thank you guys so much for what you did for me and with me here today. For all of you out in the world, we thank you so much for joining us. And again, get out there and watch Star Wars if you haven't. And not only that, look forward to future episodes of Reel to Reel, where we'll talk movies and cinema. Always remember, you're awesome, you're amazing, and the world's a better place because you're in it. We'll see you next time on Reel to Reel.